steps ahead, or the tunnel slopes downward here, my lord. I arrived here, a king's hand, riding through the gates at the head of my own sworn men, Tyrion reflected, and I leave like a rat, scuttling through the dark, holding hands with a spider. A light appeared ahead of them, too dim to be daylight, and grew as they hurried toward it. After a while, he could see it was an arched doorway, closed off by another iron gate. Varys produced a key. They stepped through into a small round chamber. Five other doors opened off the room, each barred in iron. There was an opening in the ceiling as well, and a series of rungs set in the wall below, leading upward. An ornate brazier stood to one side, fashioned in the shape of a dragon's head. The coals in the beast's yawning mouth had burned down to embers, but they still glowed with a sullen orange light. Dim as it was, the light was welcome after the blackness of the tunnel. The juncture was otherwise empty, but on the floor was a mosaic of a three-headed dragon wrought in red and black tiles. Something niggled at Tyrion for a moment. Then it came to him. "This is the place Shay told me of, when Varys first led her to my bed." "We are below the Tower of the Hand?"
"Yes."
Frozen hinges screamed in protest as Varys pulled open a long-closed door. Flakes of rust drifted to the floor.
"This will take us out to the river."
Tyrion walked slowly to the ladder, ran a hand across the lowest rung.
"This will take me up to my bedchamber." "Your lord father's bedchamber now."
He looked up the shaft. "How far must I climb?"
"My lord, you are too weak for such follies, and there is, besides, no time. We must go."
"I have business above. How far?"
230 rungs, but whatever you intend, 230 rungs, and then?" "The tunnel to the left, but hear me, how far along to the bedchamber?"
Tyrion lifted a foot to the lowest rung of the ladder.
"No more than 60 feet. Keep one hand on the wall as you go. You will feel the doors. The bedchamber is the third." He sighed. "This is folly, my lord. Your brother has given you your life back. Would you cast it away, and mine with it?"
"Varys, the only thing I value less than my life just now is yours. Wait for me here." He turned his back on the eunuch and began to climb, counting silently as he went. Rung by rung, he ascended into darkness. At first he could see the dim outline of each rung as he grasped it, and the rough, grey texture of the stone behind, but as he climbed, the black grew thicker. 13, 14, 15, 16. By 30 his arms trembled with the strain of pulling. He paused a moment to catch his breath and glanced down. A circle of faint light shone far below, half obscured by his own feet. Tyrion resumed his ascent.
39, 40, 41.
By 50 his legs burned. The ladder was endless, numbing.
68, 69, 70.
By 80 his back was a dull agony. Yet still he climbed. He could not have said why.
113, 114, 115.
At 230, the shaft was black as pitch, but he could feel the warm air flowing from the tunnel to his left, like the breath of some great beast. He poked about awkwardly with a foot and edged off the ladder. The tunnel was even more cramped than the shaft. Any man of normal size would have had to crawl on hands and knees, but Tyrion was short enough to walk upright. At last, a place made for dwarfs. His boots scuffed softly against the stone. He walked slowly.
counting steps, feeling for gaps in the walls. Soon he began to hear voices, muffled and indistinct at first, then clearer. He listened more closely. Two of his father's guardsmen were joking about the imp's whore, saying how sweet it would be to fuck her, and how bad she must want a real cock in place of the dwarf's stunted little thing.
"Most like it's got a crook in it," said Lum.
That led him into a discussion of how Tyrion would die on the morrow.
"He'll weep like a woman and beg for mercy, you'll see," Lum insisted.
Lester figured he'd face the axe brave as a lion, being a Lannister. And he was willing to bet his new boots on it.
"Ah, shit in your boots," said Lum. "You know, they never fit these feet of mine. Tell you what. If I win, you can scour my bloody mail for a fortnight."
For the space of a few feet, Tyrion could hear every word of their haggling. But when he moved on, the voices faded quickly. "Small wonder Varys did not want me to climb the bloody ladder," Tyrion thought, smiling in the dark. "Little birds, indeed." He came to the third door and fumbled about for a long time before his fingers brushed a small iron hook set between two stones. When he pulled down on it, there was a soft rumble that sounded loud as an avalanche in the stillness, and a square of dull orange light opened a foot to his left.
"The hearth!"
He almost laughed. The fireplace was full of hot ash, and a black log with a hot orange heart burning within. He edged past gingerly, taking quick steps so as not to burn his boots, the warm cinders crunching softly under his heels. When he found himself in what had once been his bedchamber, he stood a long moment, breathing the silence. Had his father heard? Would he reach for his sword? Raise the hue and cry?
"My lord,"
a woman's voice called. "That might have hurt me once, when I still felt pain." The first step was the hardest. When he reached the bed, Tyrion pulled the draperies aside, and there she was, turning toward him, with a sleepy smile on her lips. It died when she saw him. She pulled the blankets up to her chin, as if that would protect her.
"Were you expecting someone taller, sweetling?"
Big wet tears filled her eyes.
"I never meant those things I said. The Queen made me. Please. Your father frightens me so."
She sat up, letting the blanket slide down to her lap. Beneath it, she was naked, but for the chain about her throat. A chain of linked golden hands, each holding the next.
"My Lady Shay," Tyrion said softly.
"All the time I sat in the black cell waiting to die, I kept remembering how beautiful you were, in silk or rough spun, or nothing at all. My lord will be back soon. You should go, or did you come to take me away? Did you ever like it?"
He cupped her cheek, remembering all the times he had done this before, all the times he'd slid his hands around her waist, squeezed her small firm breasts, stroked her short dark hair, touched her lips, her cheeks, her ears. All the times he had opened her with a finger to probe her secret sweetness and make her moan.
"Did you ever like my touch?" "More than anything," she said. "My giant of Lannister."
"That was the worst thing you could have said, sweetling."
Tyrion slid a hand under his father's chain and twisted. The links tightened, digging into her neck.
"For hands of gold are always cold. But a woman's hands are warm," he said.
He gave cold hands another twist as the warm ones beat away his tears. Afterward, he found Lord Tywin's dagger on the bedside table and shoved it through his belt.
A lion-headed mace, a pole-axe, and a crossbow had been hung on the walls. The pole-axe would be clumsy to wield inside a castle, and the mace was too high to reach. But a large wooden iron chest had been placed against the wall directly under the crossbow. He climbed up, pulled down the bow and a leather quiver, packed with quarrels, jammed a foot into the stirrup, and pushed down until the bowstring cocked. Then he slipped a bolt into the notch. Jamie had lectured him more than once on the drawbacks of crossbows. If Lum and Lester emerged from wherever they were talking, he'd never have time to reload, but at least he'd take one down to hell with him. Lum, if he had a choice. "You'll have to clean your own mail, Lum. You lose." Waddling to the door, he listened a moment, then eased it open slowly. A lamp burned in a stone niche, casting one yellow light over the empty hallway. Only the flame was moving. Tyrion slid out, holding the crossbow down against his leg. He found his father where he knew he'd find him, seated in the dimness of the privy tower, bedrobe hiked up around his hips. At the sound of steps, Lord Tywin raised his eyes. Tyrion gave him a mocking half-bow. "My lord?" "Tyrion!" If he was afraid, Tywin Lannister gave no hint of it. "Who released you from your cell?" "I'd love to tell you, but I swore a holy oath." "The eunuch," his father decided. "I'll have his head for this. Is that my crossbow? Put it down." "Will you punish me if I refuse, father?"
"This escape is folly. You are not to be killed, if that is what you fear. It's still my intent to send you to the wall. But I could not do it without Lord Tyrell's consent. Put down the crossbow, and we will go back to my chambers and talk of it."
"We can talk here just as well. Perhaps I don't choose to go to the wall, father. It's bloody cold up there, and I believe I've had enough coldness from you. So just tell me something, and I'll be on my way. One simple question. You owe me that much."
"I owe you nothing."
"You've given me less than that all my life, but you'll give me this. What did you do with Taisha?"
"Taisha?"
He does not even remember her name. "The girl I married."
"Oh, yes, with your first whore."
Tyrion took aim at his father's chest. "The next time you say that word, I'll kill you."
"You do not have the courage."
"Shall we find out? It's a short word, and it seems to come so easily to your lips." Tyrion gestured impatiently with a bow. "Taisha, what did you do with her after my little lesson?"
"I don't recall."
"Try harder. Did you have her killed?" His father pursed his lips.
"There was no reason for that. She learned her place, and had been well paid for her day's work, I seem to recall. I suppose the steward sent her on her way. I never thought to inquire."
"On her way? Where?"
"Wherever whores go."
Tyrion's finger clenched. The crossbow whanged just as Lord Tywin started to rise. The bolt slammed into him above the groin, and he sat back down with a grunt. The quarrel had sunk deep, right to the fletching. Blood seeped out around the shaft, dripping down into his pubic hair and over his bare thighs.
"You shot me?"
he said incredulously, his eyes glossy with shock. "You always were quick to grasp a situation, my lord," Tyrion said. "That must be why you're the hand of the king."
You are no son of mine."
"Now, that is where you're wrong, father. Why, I believe I'm you, writ small. Do me a kindness now, and die quickly. I have a ship to catch." For once his father did what Tyrion asked him. The proof was the sudden stench as his bowels loosened in the moment of death.
Well, he was in the right place for it,
Tyrion thought. But the stink that filled the privy gave ample evidence that the oft-repeated jape about his father was just another lie. Lord Tywin Lannister did not, in the end, shit gold. Samwell. The king was angry. Sam saw that at once. As the Black Brothers entered one by one and knelt before him, Stannis shoved away his breakfast of hard bread, salt beef, and boiled eggs, and eyed them coldly. Beside him, the red woman, Melisandre, looked as if she found the scene amusing.
"I have no place here,"
thought Sam anxiously, when her red eyes fell upon him.
"Someone had to help Maester Aemon up the steps. Don't look at me. I'm just a Maester Stewart."
The others were contenders for the old bear's command, all but Bowen Marsh, who had withdrawn from the contest but remained Castellan and Lord Stewart. Sam did not understand why Melisandre should seem so interested in him. King Stannis kept the Black Brothers on their knees for an extraordinarily long time. "Rise," he said at last. Sam gave Maester Aemon his shoulder to help him back up. The sound of Lord Janus Slint clearing his throat broke the strained silence.
"Your Grace, let me say how pleased we are to be summoned here. When I saw your banners from the wall, I knew the realm was saved. There comes a man who ne'er forgets his duty. I said to good Sir Alistair, a strong man and a true king, may I congratulate you on your victory over the savages. The singers will make much of it, I know."
"The singers may do as they like," Stannis snapped. "Spare me your fawning, Janus, it will not serve you." He rose to his feet and frowned at them all. "Lady Melisandre tells me that you have not yet chosen a Lord Commander. I am displeased. How much longer must this folly last?"
"Sire," said Bowen Marsh in a defensive tone, "no one has achieved two-thirds of the vote yet. It has only been 10 days.
9 days too long. I've captives to dispose of, a realm to order, a war to fight. Choices must be made, decisions that involve the Wall and the Night's Watch. By rights, your Lord Commander should have a voice in those decisions."
"He should, yes," said Janus Slint. "But it must be said, we brothers are only simple soldiers. Soldiers, yes, and your Grace will know that soldiers are most comfortable taking orders. They would benefit from your royal guidance, it seems to me, for the good of the realm, to help them choose wisely."
The suggestion outraged some of the others.
"Do you want the king to wipe our asses for us too?" said Cutter Pike angrily.
"The choice of the Lord Commander belongs to the sworn brothers, and to them alone," insisted Sir Denis Malister.
"Cor, if they choose wisely, they won't be choosing me, eh?"
moaned Dolorous Ed. Maester Aemon, calm as always, said,
"Your Grace, the Night's Watch has been choosing its own leader since Brandon the Builder raised the wall. Through Jor Mormont, we have had 997 Lords Commander in unbroken succession, each chosen by the men he would lead, a tradition many thousands of years old."
Stannis ground his teeth.
"It is not my wish to tamper with your rights and traditions. As to royal guidance, Janus, if you mean that I ought to tell your brothers to choose you, have the courage to say so."
That took Lord Janus aback. He smiled uncertainly and began to sweat. But Bowen Marsh, beside him, said, "Who better to command the Black Cloaks than a man who once commanded the Gold, sire?"
"Any of you, I would think, even the Cook."
The look the king gave Slint was cold.
"Janus was hardly the first Gold Cloak ever to take a bribe, I grant you, but he may have been the first commander to fatten his purse by selling places and promotions. By the end, he must have had half the officers in the City Watch paying him part of their wages. Isn't that so, Janus?"
Slynt's neck was purpling.
Lies, all lies. A strong man makes enemies. Your Grace knows that. They whisper lies behind your back. Nought was ever proven. Not a man came forward.
Two men, who were prepared to come forward, died suddenly on their rounds. Stannis narrowed his eyes. Do not trifle with me, my lord. I saw the proof John Arryn laid before the small council. If I had been king, you would have lost more than your office, I promise you. But Robert shrugged away your little lapses. They all steal, I recall him saying. Better a thief we know than one we don't. The next man might be worse. Lord Petire's words in my brother's mouth, I'll warrant. Littlefinger had a nose for gold, and I'm certain he arranged matters so the crown profited as much from your corruption as you did yourself.
Lord Slynt's jowls were quivering, but before he could frame a further protest, Maester Aemon said,
Your Grace, by law, a man's past crimes and transgressions are wiped clean when he says his words and becomes a sworn brother of the Night's Watch.
I am aware of that.
If it happens that Lord Janus here is the best the Night's Watch can offer, I shall grit my teeth and choke him down. It is naught to me which man of you is chosen, so long as you make a choice. We have a war to fight.
Your Grace, said Sir Denis Malister, in tones of weary courtesy, if you are speaking of the wildlings...
I am not, and you know that, sir.
And you must know that whilst we are thankful for the aid you rendered us against Mance Rayder, we can offer you no help in your contest for the throne. The Night's Watch takes no part in the wars of the Seven Kingdoms. For 8,000 years...
I know your history, Sir Denis,
the king said brusquely. I give you my word. I shall not ask you to lift your swords against any of the rebels and usurpers who plague me. I do expect that you will continue to defend the wall, as you always have.
We'll defend the wall to the last man, said Cutter Pike.
Call probably me, aye,
said Dolorous Ed in a resigned tone. Stannis crossed his arms.
I shall require a few other things from you as well. Things that you may not be so quick to give. I want your castles. And I want the gift. Those blunt words burst among the Black Brothers like a pot of wildfire tossed onto a brazier. Marsh, Malister, and Pike all tried to speak at once. King Stannis let them talk. When they were done, he said, I've three chimes the men you do. I can take the lands if I wish, but I would prefer to do this legally, with your consent.
The gift was given to the Night's Watch in perpetuity, Your Grace,
Bowen Marsh insisted,
which means it cannot be lawfully seized, attainted, or taken from you. But what was given once can be given again.
What will you do with the gift? Demanded Cutter Pike.
Make better use of it than you have. As to the castles, East Watch, Castle Black, and the Shadow Tower shall remain yours. Garrison them as you always have, but I must take the others for my garrisons if we are to hold the wall.
You do not have the men, objected Bowen Marsh.
Some of the abandoned castles are scarce more than ruins, said Othel Yarwick, the first builder.
Ruins can be rebuilt.
Rebuilt, Yarwick said. But who will do the work?
That is my concern.
I shall require a list from you, detailing the present state of every castle and what might be required to restore it. I mean to have them all garrisoned again within the year, and night fires burning before their gates.
Night fires? Bowen Marsh gave Melisandre an uncertain look. Where to light night fires now?
You are.
The woman rose in the swirl of scarlet silk, her long copper-bright hair tumbling about her shoulders.
Swords alone cannot hold this darkness back. Only the lights of the Lord can do that. Make no mistake, good sirs and valiant brothers. The war we've come to fight is no petty squabble over lands and honours. Ours is a war for life itself, and should we fail, the world dies with us.
The officers did not know how to take that, Sam could see. Bowen Marsh and Othel Yarvik exchanged a doubtful look. Janus Slint was fuming, and Three-Finger Hub looked as though he would sooner be back chopping carrots. But all of them seemed surprised to hear Maester Aemon murmur,
"It is the war for the dawn you speak of, my lady. But where is the prince that was promised?"
"He stands before you," Melisande declared, "though you do not have the eyes to see. Stannis Baratheon is Azor Ahai come again, the warrior of fire. In him the prophecies are fulfilled. The red comet blazed across the sky to herald his coming, and he bears Lightbringer, the red sword of heroes."
Her words seemed to make the king desperately uncomfortable, Sam saw. Stannis ground his teeth and said,
"You called, and I came, my lord. Now you must live with me or die with me. Best get used to that."
He made a brusque gesture.
"That's all. Maester, stay a moment. And you, Tarly. The rest of you may go."
"Me?" Sam thought, stricken, as his brothers were bowing and making their way out.
"What does he want with me?"
"You are the one that killed the creature in the snow," King Stannis said, when only the four of them remained.
"Sam the Slayer," Melisandre smiled.
Sam felt his face turning red.
"No, my lady, your grace, I mean. I am, yes. I'm Samuel Tarly, yes."
"Your father is an able soldier," King Stannis said. "He defeated my brother once at Ashford. Mace Tyrell has been pleased to claim the honours for that victory, but Lord Randall had decided matters before Tyrell ever found the battlefield. He slew Lord Catherine with that great Valerian sword of his, and sent his head to Aerys." The king rubbed his jaw with a finger. "You are not the sort of son I would expect such a man to have."
I'm not the sort of son he wanted, sire."
"If you had not taken the black, you would make a useful hostage," Stannis mused.
"He has taken the black, sire," Maester Aemon pointed out.
"I am well aware of that," the king said. "I am aware of more than you know, Aemon Targaryen."
The old man inclined his head.
"I am only Aemon, sire. We give up our house names when we forge our maester's chains."
The king gave that a curt nod, as if to say he knew and did not care.
"You slew this creature with an obsidian dagger, I'm told," he said to Sam.
Yes, your grace. Jon Snow gave it to me."
"Dragonglass." The red woman's laugh was music. "Frozen fire in the tongue of old Valyria. Small wonder it is anathema to these cold children of the other."
"On Dragonstone, where I had my seat, there is much of this obsidian to be seen in the old tunnels beneath the mountain," the king told Sam. "Chunks of it, boulders, ledges. The great part of it was black, as I recall, but there was some green as well, some red, even purple. I have sent word to Sir Roland, my castellan, to begin mining it. I will not hold Dragonstone for very much longer, I fear. But perhaps the Lord of Light shall grant us enough frozen fire to arm ourselves against these creatures before the castle falls." Sam cleared his throat.
Sire, the dagger, the dragon glass, only shattered when I tried to stab a wight."
Melisandre smiled.
"Necromancy animates these wights, yet they are still only dead flesh. Steel and fire will serve for them. The ones you call the others are something more."
"Demons made of snow and ice and cold," said Stannis Baratheon. "The ancient enemy, the only enemy that matters."
He considered Sam again.
"I'm told that you and this wildling girl passed beneath the wall through some magic gate."
The Black Gate," Sam stammered. "Below the Night Fort."
"The Night Fort is the largest and oldest of the castles on the wall," the king said. "That is where I intend to make my seat whilst I fight this war.
you will show me this gate.
I, said Sam, I will if it's still there, if it will open for a man not of the black, if...
You will, snapped Stannis. I shall tell you when.
Maester Aemon smiled.
Your Grace, he said, before we go, I wonder if you would do us the great honour of showing us this wondrous blade we have all heard so very much of.
You want to see Lightbringer? A blind man?
Sam shall be my eyes.
The king frowned. Everyone else has seen the thing. Why not a blind man? His sword belt and scabbard hung from a peg near the hearth. He took the belt down and drew the longsword out. Steel scraped against wood and leather, and radiance filled the solar. Shimmering, shifting, a dance of gold and orange and red light, all the bright colours of fire.
Tell me, Samwell,
Maester Aemon touched his arm.
It glows, said Sam, in a hushed voice, as if it were on fire. There are no flames, but the steel is yellow and red and orange, all flashing and glimmering, like sunshine on water, but prettier. I wish you could see it, Maester. I see it now, Sam. A sword full of sunlight, so lovely to behold.
The old man bowed stiffly.
Your Grace, my lady, that was most kind of you.
When King Stannis sheathed the shining sword, the room seemed to grow very dark, despite the sunlight streaming through the window.
Very well, you've seen it. You may return to your duties now, and remember what I said. Your brothers will choose a Lord Commander tonight, or I shall make them wish they had.
Maester Aemon was lost in thought as Sam helped him down the narrow turnpike stair. But as they were crossing the yard, he said,
I felt no heat. Did you, Sam? Heat? From the sword?
He thought back.
The air around it was shimmering, the way it does above a hot brazier. Yet you felt no heat, did you? And the scabbard that held the sword, it is wood and leather, yes? I heard the sound when His Grace drew out the blade. Was the leather scorched, Sam? Did the wood seem burnt or blackened? No, Sam admitted. Not that I could see.
Maester Aemon nodded. Back in his own chambers, he asked Sam to set a fire and help him to his chair beside the hearth.
It is hard to be so old,
he sighed as he settled onto the cushion.
And harder still to be so blind. I miss the sun, and books. I miss books most of all.
Aemon waved a hand.
I shall have no more need of you till the choosing.
The choosing?
Maester, isn't there something you could do? What the king said of Lord Janus? I recall, Maester Aemon said, but Sam, I am a maester, chained and sworn. My duty is to counsel the Lord Commander, whoever he might be. It would not be proper for me to be seen to favour one contender over another. I'm not a maester, said Sam. Could I do something?
Aemon turned his blind white eyes towards Sam's face and smiled softly.
Why, I don't know, Samwell. Could you?
I could, Sam thought. I have to.
He had to do it right away, too. If he hesitated, he was certain to lose his courage.
I am a man of the night's watch,
he reminded himself as he hurried across the yard.
I am. I can do this.
There had been a time when he had quaked and squeaked if Lord Mormont so much as looked at him, but that was the old Sam, before the Fist of the First Men and Craster's Keep, before the Whites and Cold Hands and the other on his dead horse. He was braver now.
Killy made me braver, he told John.
It was true. It had to be true. Cutter Pike was the scarier of the two commanders, so Sam went to him first, while his courage was still hot. He found him in the old shield hall, dicing with three of his East watchmen, and a red-headed sergeant who had come from Dragonstone with Stannis. When Sam begged leave to speak with him, though, Pike barked an order, and the others took the dice and coins and left them. No man would ever call Cutter Pike handsome, though the body under his studded brigantine and rough-spun breeches was lean and hard and wiry strong. His eyes were small and close-set, his nose broken, his widow's peak as sharply pointed as the head of a spear. The pox had ravaged his face badly, and the beard he'd grown to hide the scars was thin and scraggly.
"Sam the Slayer," he said by way of greeting, "are you sure you stabbed another, and not some child Snow Knight?"
"This isn't starting well." "It was a dragon glass that killed it, my lord," Sam explained feebly.
"Aye, no doubt. Well, out with it, Slayer. Did the maester send you to me?"
"The maester?" Sam swallowed. I just left him, my lord."
That wasn't truly a lie, but if Pike chose to read it wrong, it might make him more inclined to listen. Sam took a deep breath and launched into his plea. Pike cut him off before he said 20 words.
"You want me to kneel down and kiss the hem of Malister's pretty cloak, is that it? I might have known. Your lordlings all flock like sheep. Well, tell Aemon that he's wasted your breath and my time. If anyone withdraws, it should be Malister. The man's too bloody old for the job. Maybe you're to go tell him that. Eh? We choose him, and we're like to be back here in a year choosing someone else."
"He's old," Sam agreed, "but he's well experienced.
As sitting in his tower and fussing over maps, maybe. What does he plan to do, write letters to the whites? He's a knight, well and good, but he's not a fighter. And I don't give a kettle of piss who he unhorsed in some fool tourney 50 years ago. The half-hand fought all his battles. Even an old blind man should see that. And we need a fighter more than ever with this bloody king on top of us. Today it's ruins and empty fields, well and good. But what will his grace want come the morrow? You think Malister has the belly to stand up to Stannis Baratheon and that red bitch?" He laughed. "I don't."
"You won't support him then," said Sam, dismayed.
"Are you Sam the Slayer or Death Dick? No, I won't support him."
Pike jabbed a finger at his face.
"Understand this, boy. I don't want the bloody job. I never did. I fight best with a deck beneath me, not a horse. And Castle Black is too far from the sea. But I'll be buggered with a red-hot sword before I turn the night's watch over to that preening eagle from the Shadow Tower. And you can run back to the old man and tell him I said so, if he asks." He stood, "Get out of my sight."
It took all the courage Sam had left in him to say,
What if there was someone else? Could you support someone else?"
"Who? Bowen Marsh? The man counts spoons. Uttle's a follower, does what he's told, and does it well, but no more than that. Slint? Well, his men like him, I grant you, and it would almost be worth it to stick him down the royal claw and see if Stannis gagged. But no. There's too much of King's Landing in that one. A toad grows wings and thinks he's a bloody dragon." Pike laughed. "Who does that leave? Hub? We could pick him, I suppose. Only then who's going to boil your mutton, Slayer? You look like a man who likes his bloody mutton."
There was nothing more to say. Defeated, Sam could only stammer out his thanks and take his leave.
"I will do better with Sir Dennis," he tried to tell himself as he walked through the castle.
Sir Dennis was a knight, high-born and well-spoken, and he treated Sam most courteously when he'd found him and Gilly on the road.
Sir Dennis will listen to me. He has to.
The commander of the Shadow Tower had been born beneath the booming tower of Seaguard, and looked every inch a Malister. Sable trimmed his collar and accented the sleeves of his black velvet doublet. A silver eagle fastened its claws in the gathered folds of his cloak. His beard was white as snow, his hair was largely gone, and his face was deeply lined, it was true. Yet he still had grace in his movements and teeth in his mouth, and the years had dimmed neither his blue-grey eyes nor his courtesy. "My Lord of Tarly," he said, when his steward brought Sam to him in the Lance, where the Shadow Tower men were staying. "I am pleased to see that you've recovered from your ordeal. Might I offer you a cup of wine? Your lady mother is a Florent, I recall. One day I must tell you about the time I unhorsed both of your grandfathers in the same tourney. Not today, though. I know we have more pressing concerns. You come from Maester Aemon, to be sure. Does he have counsel to offer me?" Sam took a sip of wine and chose his words with care.
"A maester chained and sworn, it would not be proper for him to be seen as having influenced the choice of Lord Commander."
The old knight smiled. "Which is why he has not come to me himself.
Yes, I quite understand, Samwell.
Aemon and I are both old men and wise in such matters. Say what you came to say."
The wine was sweet, and Sir Dennis listened to Sam's plea with grave courtesy, unlike Cotter Pike. But when he was done, the old knight shook his head.
"I agree that it would be a dark day in our history if a king were to name our Lord Commander. This king especially. He's not like to keep his crown for long, but truly, Samwell, it ought to be Pike who withdraws. I have more support than he does, and I am better suited to the office."
"You are," Sam agreed. "But Cutter Pike might serve. It's said that he has oft proved himself in battle."
He did not mean to offend Sir Dennis by praising his rival, but how else could he convince him to withdraw?
"Many of my brothers have proved themselves in battle. It is not enough. Some matters cannot be settled with a battle axe. Maester Aemon will understand that, though Cutter Pike does not. The Lord Commander of the Night's Watch is a lord, first and foremost. He must be able to treat with other lords and with kings as well. He must be a man worthy of respect."
Sir Dennis leaned forward.
"We are the sons of great lords, you and I. We know the importance of birth, blood, and that early training that can ne'er be replaced. I was a squire at 12, a knight at 18, a champion at 22. I have been the commander at the Shadow Tower for 33 years. Blood, birth, and training have fitted me to deal with kings. Pike, well, did you hear him this morning? Asking if his grace would wipe his bottom? Samwell, it's not my habit to speak unkindly of my brothers, but let us be frank. The Ironborn are a race of pirates and thieves, and Cutter Pike was raping and murdering when he was still half a boy. Mr. Harmoon reads and writes his letters, and has for years. No, loath as I am to disappoint Maester Aemon, I could not in honour stand aside for Pike of Eastwatch."
This time Sam was ready.
"Might you for someone else, if it was someone more suitable?"
Sir Dennis considered a moment.
"I have never desired the honour for its own sake. At the last choosing, I stepped aside gratefully when Lord Mormont's name was offered, just as I had for Lord Corgill at the choosing before that. So long as the Night's Watch remains in good hands, I am content. But Beren Marsh is not equal to the task, no more than Othel Jarvik. And this so-called Lord of Harrenhal is a butcher's whelp, upjumped by the Lannisters. Small wonder he is venal and corrupt."
"There is another man," Sam blurted out. "Lord Commander Mormont trusted him. So did Donal Noy and Curran Halfhand. Though he's not as highly born as you, he comes from old blood. He was castle-born and castle-raised, and he learned sword and lance from a knight and letters from a maester of the citadel. His father was a lord, and his brother a king.
Sir Dennis stroked his long white beard.
"Mayhaps," he said after a long moment. "He is very young, but mayhaps he might serve, I grant you. Though I would be more suitable, I have no doubt of that. I would be the wiser choice." John said there could be honour in a lie if it were told for the right reason. Sam said, "If we do not choose a Lord Commander tonight, King Stannis means to name Cutter Pike. He said as much to Maester Aemon this morning, after all of you had left."
"I see," Sir Dennis rose. "I must think on this. Thank you, Samwell, and give my thanks to Maester Aemon as well."
Sam was trembling by the time he left the lance.
"What have I done?" he thought. "What have I said? If they caught him in his lie, they would, what, send me to the wall, rip my entrails out, turn me into a white?"
Suddenly it all seemed absurd. How could he be so frightened of Cutter Pike and Sir Dennis Mallister, when he had seen a raven eating Small Paul's face? Pike was not pleased by his return.
"You again, make it quick. You are starting to annoy me."
"I only need a moment more," Sam promised. "You won't withdraw for Sir Dennis, you said, but you might for someone else."
"Who's it this time, Slayer? You?"
"No, a fighter. Donal Noy gave him the wall when the wildlings came, and he was the old bear squire. The only thing is, he's bastard-born."
Cutter Pike laughed.
"Bloody hell, that would shove a spear up Mallister's arse, wouldn't it? Might be worth it, just for that. How bad could the boy be?" He snorted. "I'd be better, though. I'm what's needed. Any fool can see that."
"Any fool," Sam agreed. "Even me. But, well, I shouldn't be telling you, but King Stannis means to force a Dennis on us if we do not choose a man tonight. I heard him tell Maester Aemon that, after the rest of you were sent away."
John. Iron Emmet was a long, lanky young ranger whose endurance, strength, and swordsmanship were the pride of East Watch. John always came away from their sessions stiff and sore, and woke the next day covered with bruises, which was just the way he wanted it. He would never get any better going up against the likes of Satin and Horse, or even Gren. Most days he gave as good as he got, John liked to think. But not today. He had hardly slept last night, and after an hour of restless tossing, he had given up the attempt, dressed, and walked to the top of the wall till the sun came up, wrestling with Stannis Baratheon's offer. The lack of sleep was catching up with him now, and Emmet was hammering him mercilessly across the yard, driving him back on his heels with one long looping cut after another, and slamming him with his shield from time to time for good measure. John's arm had gone numb from the shock of impact, and the edgeless practice sword seemed to be growing heavier with every passing moment. He was almost ready to lower his blade and call a halt, when Emmet fainted low and came in over his shield with a savage forehand slash that caught John on the temple. He staggered, his helm and head both ringing from the force of the blow. For half a heartbeat, the world beyond his eye slit was a blur. And then the years were gone, and he was back at Winterfell once more, wearing a quilted leather coat in place of mail and plate. His sword was made of wood, and it was Rob who stood facing him, not Iron Emmet. Every morning they had trained together since they were big enough to walk, Snow and Stark spinning and slashing about the wards of Winterfell, shouting and laughing, sometimes crying, when there was no one else to see. They were not little boys when they fought, but knights and mighty heroes,
"I'm Prince Aemon, the Dragon Knight," John would call out, and Rob would shout back, "Well, I'm Florian the Fool." Or Rob would say, "I'm the Young Dragon," and John would reply, "I'm Sir Ryan Redwine." That morning, he called it first. "I'm Lord of Winterfell," he cried, as he had 100 times before. Only this time, Rob had answered, "You can't be the Lord of Winterfell. You're bastard-born. My lady mother says you can't ever be the Lord of Winterfell." I thought I'd forgotten that. John could taste blood in his mouth from the blow he'd taken. In the end, Holder and Horse had to pull him away from Iron Emmet, one man on either arm. The ranger sat on the ground dazed, his shield half in splinters, the visor of his helm knocked askew, and his sword 6 yards away. "John, enough!" Holder was shouting. "He's down! You disarmed him! Enough!" "No, not enough. Never enough." John let his sword drop. I'm sorry," he muttered. "Emmet, are you hurt?" Iron Emmet pulled his battered helm off. "Was there some part of yield you could not comprehend, Lord Snow?" It was said amiably, though. Emmet was an amiable man, and he loved the song of swords. "Warrior, defend me," he groaned. "Now I know how Corran Halfhand must have felt." That was too much. John wrenched free of his friends and retreated to the armory alone. His ears were still ringing from the blow Emmet had dealt him. He sat on the bench and buried his head in his hands. "Why am I so angry?" he asked himself, but it was a stupid question. "Lord of Winterfell? I could be the Lord of Winterfell, my father's heir." It was not Lord Eddard's face he saw floating before him, though. It was Lady Catelyn's. With her deep blue eyes and hard, cold mouth, she looked a bit like Stannis. Iron, he thought, but brittle. She was looking at him the way she used to look at him at Winterfell, whenever he had bested Robert swords or sums or most anything. "Who are you?" that look had always seemed to say. "This is not your place. Why are you here?" His friends were still out in the practice yard, but John was in no fit state to face them. He left the armory by the back, descending a steep flight of stone steps to the wormways, the tunnels that linked the castle's keeps and towers below the earth. It was a short walk to the bathhouse, where he took a cold plunge to wash the sweat off and soaked in a hot stone tub. The warmth took some of the ache from his muscles and made him think of Winterfell's muddy pools steaming and bubbling in the godswood. Winterfell, he thought. Theon left it burned and broken, but I could restore it. Surely his father would have wanted that, and Rob as well. They would never have wanted the castle left in ruins. "You can't be the Lord of Winterfell, you're a bastard-born," he heard Rob say again, and the Stone Kings were growling at him with granite tongues. "You do not belong here. This is not your place." When John closed his eyes, he saw the heart tree with its pale limbs, red leaves, and solemn face. The Weirwood was the heart of Winterfell, Lord Eddard always said. But to save the castle, John would have to tear that heart up by its ancient roots and feed it to the Red Woman's hungry fire god. "I have no right," he thought. "Winterfell belongs to the old gods." The sound of voices echoing off the vaulted ceiling brought him back to Castle Black.
"I don't know," a man was saying, in a voice thick with doubt. "Maybe if I knew the man better. Lord Stannis didn't have much good to see of him, I'll tell you that. When has Stannis Baratheon ever had much good to say of anyone?"
Sir Alistair's flinty voice was unmistakable.
"If we let Stannis choose our Lord Commander, we become his bannermen in all but name. Tywin Lannister is not like to forget that, and you know it will be Lord Tywin who wins in the end. He's already beaten Stannis once on the Blackwater."
"Lord Tywin favours Slint," said Bowen Marsh, in a fretful, anxious voice.
I can show you his letter, Othel. Our faithful friend and servant, he called him.
Jon Snow sat up suddenly, and the three men froze at the sound of the slush.
My lords, he said with cold courtesy.
What are you doing here, bastard?
Thorne asked.
Bathing. But don't let me spoil your plotting.
Jon climbed from the water, dried, dressed, and left them to conspire. Outside he found he had no idea where he was going. He walked past the shell of the Lord Commander's tower, where once he'd saved the old bear from a dead man, past the spot where Ygritte had died, with that sad smile on her face, past the King's Tower, where he and Satin and deaf Dick Fallard had waited for the Magnar and his thens, past the heaped and charred remains of the great wooden stair. The inner gate was open, so Jon went down the tunnel, through the wall. He could feel the cold around him, the weight of all the ice above his head. He walked past the place where Donal Noy and Mag the Mighty had fought and died together, through the new outer gate and back into the pale, cold sunlight. Only then did he permit himself to stop, to take a breath, to think. Othel Jarvik was not a man of strong convictions, except when it came to wood and stone and mortar. The old bear had known that. Thorne and Marsh will sway him. Jarvik will support Lord Janus, and Lord Janus will be chosen Lord Commander. And what does that leave me, if not Winterfell? A wind swirled against the wall, tugging at his cloak. He could feel the cold coming off the ice the way heat comes off a fire. Jon pulled up his hood and began to walk again. The afternoon was growing old, and the sun was low in the west. 100 yards away was the camp where King Stannis had confined his wildling captives within a ring of ditches, sharpened stakes, and high wooden fences. To his left were the three great fire pits, where the victors had burned the bodies of all the free folk to die beneath the wall, huge pelted giants and little hornfoot men alike. The killing ground was still a desolation of scorched weeds and hardened pitch, but Mance's people had left traces of themselves everywhere. A torn hide that might have been part of a tent, a giant's maul, the wheel of a chariot, a broken spear, a pile of mammoth dung. On the edge of the haunted forest, where the tents had been, Jon found an oakwood stump and sat. Ygritte wanted me to be a wildling. Stannis wants me to be the Lord of Winterfell. But what do I want? The sun crept down the sky to dip behind the wall, where it curved through the western hills. Jon watched as that towering expanse of ice took on the reds and pinks of sunset. Would I sooner be hanged for a turncloak by Lord Janus, or forswear my vows, marry Val, and become the Lord of Winterfell? It seemed an easy choice when he thought of it in those terms, though if Ygritte had still been alive, it might have been easier. Val was a stranger to him. She was not hard on the eye, certainly, and she had been sister to Mance Rayder's queen. But still, I would need to steal her, if I wanted her love. But she might give me children. I might some day hold a son of my own blood in my arms. A son was something Jon Snow had never dared dream of since he decided to live his life on the wall. I could name him Rob. Val would want to keep her sister's son, but we could foster him at Winterfell, and Gilly's boy as well. Sam would never need to tell his lie. We'd find a place for Gilly, too, and Sam could come visit her once a year or so. Mance's son and Crestus would grow up brothers, as I once did with Rob. He wanted it, Jon knew then. He wanted it as much as he had ever wanted anything. I have always wanted it, he thought guiltily. May the gods forgive me. It was a hunger inside him, sharp as a dragonglass blade. A hunger. He could feel it. It was food he needed, prey. A red deer that stank of fear, or a great elk, proud and defiant. He needed to kill and fill his belly with fresh meat and hot, dark blood.
His mouth began to water with the thought. It was a long moment before he understood what was happening. When he did, he bolted.